Welcome back to the Homeschool Conversation Podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Davis, and today I have a special guest, Mr. James Wigglesworth, and he's here to help walk us through the very hard subject of math. Yes, it's math. And a lot of our listeners are homeschooling, and they are actually very, very scared of this subject. So I'm so happy to have James here with us because he is a math whiz, and he was homeschooled himself. So welcome to the show, James, and thanks for being here with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ashley.
Yeah, I know that you are giving your time today, even though you're very busy with what you're doing with the math world. I wanted to see if you could share with us you know, it's crazy that you were homeschooled because a lot of kids think that when you're homeschooled, you're going to struggle with math. And clearly that wasn't the truth for you. So what was it like for you to be homeschooled? Were you always in love with math, or did that happen later for you?
That's a good question. Let's see. When I was maybe in late elementary school, I had this fascination with like logic puzzles and math a little bit. I don't remember being in love with math in elementary school, but I definitely liked maybe even IQ puzzles or, you know, logic puzzles and books like that. And so we would go to a lot of bookstores and I would find whatever kind of stuff that struck my fancy. And then I was more interested in science in middle school, I think. And so I wanted to be a physicist for a long time. And I read books like about Einstein and, you know, scientists and science in general in my free time. So I was interested in, you know, STEM since I was probably a kid. Not math specifically, but I always kind of enjoyed math. And I was fairly good at it throughout middle school and high school. So
yeah, that's interesting that you weren't actually directly interested in math. So you probably didn't know that you would grow up to be a math tutor, but it was just something that maybe came naturally to you. So did your mom always use a curriculum with you to help you develop that interest in science, or do you feel like that came naturally to you?
I don't think it was the curriculum per se. I was like, it was ingrained in me, I think. And the funny thing is, everyone else in my family teaches or studied English to an extent. So my dad teaches ESL and writing, and my sister teaches ESL and or TESOL, and my mom taught English and reading and things like that. And so I was the only like STEM person in the family. So my family was always like, where did he get that
from? That's funny. Did those things, I'm curious, were those subjects harder for you? Like English and writing?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like such a bad writer for so long. I think this is kind of a common thread with homeschool students, which is funny because, you know, that everyone else in my family was kind of good with that. But like, I was pretty horrible at it for a long time.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, my mom's a teacher and she says that a lot of her homeschooled kids that come back into her school, they seem to struggle with writing. And my son does struggle with writing, but it makes me think like maybe it doesn't end up really mattering because you have strengths in other areas that end up overcompensating for that one area that you're not good at it. Because do you feel like you never overcame that? Like, do you still hate writing, but you're able to do it? Or
I think I finally figured out the trick to writing, and it wasn't until I was adult, maybe after college even. And now I don't love it, but I have to write things for like my website or for promotional materials for myself or whatever. And now I can do it a bit better, and I can get across my ideas in a clear way. So, but that is not to say that there aren't some kids that are like brilliant at that. Like, I've met some homeschool students that are just like brilliant writers, and you know, so I think everyone has their own strengths maybe,
Yeah. No, I agree. Because my daughter is 2 years younger and she's like writing her own books and she loves writing. She writes menus and I can't stop her from writing. So it's just something that I think, like you said, it either comes naturally to you or not. It's not about the curriculum. And so, like, speaking of curriculum, that seems to be a really hot topic right now with all the new homeschoolers coming into the scene. They don't know what curriculum they should pick. They're flooded with options. And then math, for some reason, is the high pressure point one that they feel like they have to pick the right math one. So what do you think about that? What do you think about the math curriculum options that are out there and sort of where math education's going wrong with curriculums or with other tools that are out there for math?
Yeah, that's an important question. Let me see. I think I'll use this time to introduce kind of an analogy to how I see math education and how that's different than some other people maybe. So imagine that you're a so we all know IKEA, right? We get furniture from IKEA.
Love
We
IKEA.
love IKEA, right? It's great. Cheap, easy furniture. It's easy to put together. It's simple, right?
Yeah, actually, you're not a homeschool family until you've shopped at IKEA. So just in case
Exactly.
anyone is wondering how you get initiated into.
My family, actually, we used to go out for lunch during like school hours, and we would just go to lunch and hang out at IKEA for a couple hours and then eat their meatballs and whatever.
Yeah, that's funny.
So have fond memories of that. But anyway, so think about an IKEA front piece of IKEA furniture, and how do you put it together? Well, they have instructions that are so easy to use, and in fact, you can, doesn't matter what language you speak, you can still use it. And they have a tool, a simple, very specific tool, an Allen wrench that allows you to put the furniture together. So imagine that there's someone who works for IKEA, some furniture assembler, let's say. And they've been working there for 6 months. They've put together tons and tons of IKEA furniture. Now, after that, let's say they want to move on to bigger and better things, and they think, okay, well, let me try to build a table, or let me try to put together a shed from scratch, right? And they might find that the things that they learned putting together like IKEA furniture is not super applicable to how to build a table or how to build a shed or something like this, right? First of all, they haven't even used any tools. They haven't learned how to use tools. There's a saw, there's a Phillips head screwdriver, there's a wrench, hammer, all these kind of useful tools that they haven't really had to use because they were putting together IKEA furniture. Everything's kind of manufactured for them for that instance. And so math to me is kind of the same thing. The goal of math education to me should be to give kids the tools of math, the mental tools, the conceptual tools, and what we've done is we've kind of simplified a lot of things down to just simple instruction books that anyone can follow along, and then you follow these steps and you get to the answer. And we give you very specific and not particularly useful tools. So like the Allen wrench is like, it's not that useful. It's good for that one thing, but when you go to the real world and you try to use it, it's not very useful anymore. And so in my mind, math education is like that these days. We should be giving kids these tools to solve general problems, but instead we're kind of glossing over all of that and giving them the really simple stuff.
Yeah, I see what you mean by that. That's such an awesome analogy. And then it kind of begs the question then for me in my mind, what are those tools that you think are missing that would be more applicable to kids learning more subjects and not having to be spoon-fed every single concept?
Let's see. So in general, not to give any examples yet, but just in general, I think math has a lot of thinking skills that when it's taught right, that kids can walk away with those thinking skills. They can walk away with decision-making skills and lots of specific concepts from algebra and even geometry and things like that can be used in the real world, but it's not really shown how they can be used in the real world. It's not really shown not only what they mean, but like how is it relevant to real life, right?
Yeah, and I think kids know that, right? Like, I remember thinking that when I was in high school, like, what is the point of the Pythagorean theorem? Why am I learning like quadrilateral equations? This doesn't make sense. And I feel like I remember all of my friends asking our math teachers that, like, why are we learning this? What's the point of this? Because we never saw it show up anywhere else. And I feel like I wish now, looking back, that my teacher would have said, like, maybe you're not going to have to find the area of a triangle, but maybe the thinking that goes into finding the area of a triangle is going to help you one day with when you're building something, or with just the critical thinking and the decision making that goes into that. I wish they would have kind of put it into context for me so that I would have valued it. And I think that's kind of like what you're saying, is that in school or even in homeschool, we're using curriculums that are not helping kids to make the connection between why they need to learn this beyond just like, oh, well, you're going to need this for college. It's like, kids don't care about college.
Right. And not everyone goes to college, and not everyone's going to be a physicist or a mathematician or even a computer scientist or something like that. And so the question is, if I'm not going to do those things other than just getting into college, what is it useful for? Does it have any impact over my life? And I think with writing, it has a little, like, English and writing has a bit better of a PR, I guess. Like, people kind of understand, oh, well, you want to communicate effectively, so you learn English, right? But math, it's like, well, what even is math for? But let me give you a more specific example just to kind of illuminate what I'm saying. So, for instance, think about a choice. This might seem like an artificial choice, but just run with it for a second. So say that you have two options. You can be paid $10,000 every day for 30 days, okay? Or you can be paid 1 cent on the first day, and then 2 cents on the second day, and then 4 cents, and then 8 cents, and it keeps doubling every day for the same 30 days. So either $10,000 every day for 30 days, or 1 cent, and then 2 cents, and then 4 cents, and then 8 cents, and then 16 cents, et cetera, for 30 days. So which, just using your intuition, like, what is your gut telling you feels better? The $10,000
every day? I want $10,000 a day. It actually reminds me of that lottery ticket option where you can get paid out for life, I think. Like, you can get $5,000 a month for life, or you can choose to, like, cash out. I forgot what the two options were, but it's similar to that. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to know, you have to decide when you win. Do you want to be paid for life, or do you want to have that monthly thing, that monthly payout? And you have to sort of calculate, wait, which way am I going to get more money?
Yeah. And then the taxes and all that stuff. Yeah. I think everyone's intuition is screaming at them, go for the $10,000 every day. That sounds good, right? It's actually, so let's see, let's do the math. That's about $300,000 after a month, okay? So actually, if you get a cent every day, a cent and then 2 cents, and you keep doubling it, 2, 4, 8, 16, et cetera, after a month, you'll have $5 million.
What?
Yeah.
I don't believe you. I'm gonna have to whip out my calculator after this episode.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, it blows people's minds. It's exponential growth. So that's what that is. That's exponential growth. It's the amount that it changes by is the same as how much you have on that day. So on the 15th day, if you have, $100,000, you get $100,000 the next day because it's doubling every time. And so that doubling impact starts off slow and then ramps up incredibly quickly. And our minds aren't really meant to deal with those types of, like, numbers and increases. We're really used to dealing with, like, okay, your income, your salary, your allowance, is very consistent, right? We're used to dealing with those types of things, but our brains just get fried when you talk about exponential growth. But the thing is that exponential growth is related to the stock market or your IRA or your 401k. These all have exponential growth. And so that's why people tell you, like, set aside money early for retirement when you're younger, and then because it's going to grow exponentially. But that's really not, it doesn't come to us intuitively. And so that's one of the things that I highlight in my algebra classes and my high school classes, is how weird exponential growth is, but how important it is for financial decision making.
Yeah, I mean, I wish that was part of the traditional public school system education. And I think it could be, if the teacher is willing to go that extra step and say, like, this is how this could come in handy one day. You might want to put this in your little black book of things you don't forget, instead of like, is this going to be on the test? So can I just memorize it for the test and get it out of my brain after? And so when you're working with homeschool students, because I didn't even get a chance to have you introduce everything you do, but I know that you're a private math tutor, and I don't know if you exclusively work with homeschool students or also with public school students. Are you having to bring that into the conversation a lot when you're talking with them, or share with us what you are doing when you're working with students, and if you're working with homeschooled only or public schooled as well?
Okay, yeah. Let me just give a little bit of my background, basically. I've been teaching math in some form or another for about 17 years. And since I was pretty young, I started off as a tutor in community college, and then just basically consistently taught math throughout most of college. And I graduated, I became kind of a full-time tutor. So that was like my main gig. And I started teaching public school kids, just high school math, basically. So I had graduated from UCLA with a math degree, and I came in as a physics major. I said I was interested in physics, first of all, and science and things. And so at some point in that process, I switched. I was like, I think math suits me a bit better. But afterwards, I decided not to go to graduate school. I decided to, that teaching was more along the lines of what I wanted to do. So I tried tutoring. So after college, I was tutoring in high school, mostly public school kids. And I was pretty bad. I was pretty bad at it. Nowadays I say that if you're good at math, you probably are bad at teaching math.
Yeah, I can imagine that, because it's like a language.
Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to it's hard to remember what it's like to not understand it once you've understood like such a high level of it, right? So you're like, for you, maybe it's like, oh, how could someone not understand basic arithmetic or basic addition? It's like, that can blow your mind. And for me, it would blow my mind that kids like couldn't add fractions or something like that, even if they're in high school. And you know, now my perspective has changed entirely. And now I can help kids at all levels of math, regardless of what they can or can't do. It took many years for me to get to that point. And so it was years of doing high school, public school students, private school students. And it wasn't until about five years ago or so, I was asked to teach some homeschoolers and maybe start like a math team and really more rigorous math, getting them ready for competitions and things like this. And so that was my introduction to the homeschool world. And that's where I met a variety of influential homeschoolers in the Southern California area. I met Abby Lai from Homeschool Coaches. I kind of got into the community through a few avenues like that. And then I just started teaching homeschool students, not exclusively, but more of a majority.
Yeah, I'm sure the students must be so encouraged to see that you were homeschooled and you went to college. You went to UCLA, a prestigious, university. And what was that like for you anyway? I feel like I'm jumping around because I have so many questions and thoughts to ask you about, but I'm wondering what that was like for you to go to college. Did you feel like you weren't prepared? I'm assuming you were homeschooled all the way up to college, but I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, so for my homeschooling experience was never went to school. I think maybe I went to preschool a little bit, but once kindergarten started, I was homeschooled. And I was never put in public school or private or any type of school setting until I started community college when I was 15. And then I took like a few classes, like a French class or something. And then I started full-time community college when I was 16.
Okay, so then you were probably more than prepared to go to college when you went to UCLA.
It's not that simple. UCLA is very hard. And, you know, even if that's your passion, even if that's like something you care about, and like I spent all of high school doing like gifted program, math and science, gifted, like after school program, essentially I learned computer science. I learned advanced math that's not taught in high school. I learned all kinds of crazy stuff to prepare me for that type of environment. And still, even after all that, it was still kind of shaky. The community college I went to, Citrus, nothing against Citrus. I mean, I had a lot of great teachers at Citrus, and they changed my life in some ways, but the rigor was not at the level of UCLA.
Yeah, so, of course not. Is Citrus a community college?
Mm-hmm. It's in Glendora.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, that's just universal, I think, with community colleges not being equivalent to university level, like four-year level university type of rigor. But I think it's a nice stepping stone, though, between the transition of high school into, you know, rather than what most kids get, which is they go right from high school into the wolf's den, so to speak. And
yeah.
So at least you had that transition. And I guess what I was wondering was, did you feel like you weren't ready, like homeschooling? Do you feel like homeschooling prepared you enough? Or did you, when you say that it was a little shaky, what do you mean by that? What were some of the things that you think you struggled with? And do you really think that the things you struggled with were unique to your homeschooling experience? Or do you feel like other kids who went to public school maybe also struggled with those same things?
I would say the one thing that was more unique to my experience as a homeschooler and being homeschooled for my whole life was like time management. When you go to public school, you have to deal with deadlines and like, oh, this test is on this day and this, you know. I dealt with it okay in community college because community college was just so much easier, I think. Like I was at the top of my class for most of the classes at Citrus. Sorry, did I say UCLA? I meant Citrus. Mm-hmm. So Citrus wasn't so much of an issue. I still had time management issues, but when I got to UCLA, I was being challenged so much. And then at the same time of not having great time management and I don't want to say self-directedness because like I was passionate about what I was doing, but you know, waking up consistently or like, you know, setting aside time for homework and, you know, just that whole thing. I was not the best at that, I would say.
Yeah. Well, that's helpful, you know, insight, because some of the listeners are wondering, how can I learn from people's mistakes, or how can I learn from people's struggles, and how can I best prepare my kid if I am going to homeschool them to not fall into what are considered common pitfalls or common issues with homeschoolers. So I feel like that's helpful insight, at least for anyone who's listening and wondering what are some of the truths about what homeschoolers actually struggle with. Because I think that there's like a lot of other myths that come up about them being academically behind or them being socially unprepared, and just things that feel like major issues that are hard to fix and hard to go back in time and change. So I love that your issue with time management and self and managing your time, that doesn't seem like it'd be a horrible thing to overcome. You probably learned quickly that it was an issue and that you had to develop some type of tactic to combat it. So do you feel like that happened for you, that you ended up figuring out a system to ultimately graduate?
I mean, I graduated, so.
Had to do something.
Yeah, I got through it.
And what was your degree? It was a math degree, or what was it called?
Yeah, a bachelor's of science in pure math.
Okay. So now that you have this this background and you're seeing all the curriculum that are coming out, do you have any math curriculum that you actually think they're doing it right? Because I feel like when you were... explaining the way some curriculums are, I was thinking of Life of Fred. I don't know if you've ever heard of that one. And that's the one where the mouse Fred, and he brings up different times math is applied to the real world, and it goes from like elementary math all the way up to, I think, college level math. What do you think of that curriculum, or other ones that are like it, if you think there's a better one?
Yeah, so actually a number of years ago, there was a family I was teaching that really liked Life of Fred. Their kids, you know, enjoyed that. They were big readers, and so that just like, you know, it brought their imagination into math, I think. And so it has good aspects, I think. It's not a perfect curriculum because I feel like sometimes you have to read between the lines too much, and there's like gaps here and there that might not be fully filled in by his material. So I would say it's a good supplement to a lot of curriculum that is more, you know, rote or process oriented. He can give a nice alternative perspective. And I like a lot of the examples he does. It's very, like you said, real life oriented, and like, here's math in the real world. So I like that aspect of it. But it's not perfect. Unfortunately, there's not a perfect curriculum out there that I can recommend.
I feel like we need to say that again for the listeners, because they're just like, what's the perfect one? I want the perfect one.
Nope, it's not. By the way, around the time that I started teaching homeschoolers was also around the time that the United States was transitioning, and California in particular was transitioning into Common Core. And so I teach public school kids, but that's what I did at the time. And so I made a point to research into not just Common Core, but like all curriculum. And so that started my journey. So for the past maybe 5 years, I've studied curriculum from all across the world, literally all across the United States, Australia, India, Britain, Canada, you know, even China to an extent, and Singapore. Like, Singapore math is very famous, and the different states have made their own curriculum or their own versions of what they think is a good curriculum. Utah, Virginia, a lot of these places have published either online or secretly or privately, or they've created their own curriculum. And so I've spent hours and hours and hours looking across all of this curriculum, seeing what's the cutting edge, what are the new ways of teaching math. And so I've kind of categorized math into the new style and the old style. And a lot of homeschool math, unfortunately, is leaning more towards the old style. There's a few exceptions like Singapore and Math Mammoth, I think is what it's called. Those are a little bit leaning more towards the new style of how to teach math. And, you know, the new style basically just means that it's more critical thinking. It's more digging your hands into the concepts of what's underlying the math, and not just looking at the process and how to get the right answer at the end of the day. You know, a scary thing or a weird thing that people don't realize is that pretty much all of high school math, there's actually an app. You can download it after we're done here, and you can check it out. It's called PhotoMath. And you can even handwrite an equation, some algebra equation, even a calculus equation, and put the phone over what you've written, like the camera is gonna read what you've written, and then tap the PhotoMath app, and it will solve the equation for you and show you all the steps.
Whoa. Is that robotic operated, or is there a live person on the other side? Do you know?
It's all, you know, logic of the computer.
Wow. And it's a free app, PhotoMath?
It's a free app.
Oh my goodness. How do people create these apps and then not charge people money for it, but then it's still profitable somehow to them?
That's, I think, insane. It must be ads or something. Even in college, I used Wolfram Alpha, which is a computation engine, and Wolfram Alpha can do not only high school math, but college math, like physics, chemistry, all kinds of stuff. I mean, you can't type in a word problem and it will figure it out. But if you have like a typical math assignment question, it can do all of high school math, all of geometry, algebra, calculus, all those types of things. It can solve them. So I think people lose sight of the fact that all these algorithms and processes that we're teaching kids can be done by the computer better and faster and more accurately.
Yeah, my husband often reminds me of that. He's like, we have to be careful about what we're forcing our kids to memorize. That ultimately is going to become useless knowledge one day, that a robot will be able to do it better and faster. And so it's not, we have to be careful, just in general, not relating to math, but in general, about making our kids memorize like the capitals of certain cities or of states, and memorizing years that wars happened in. It's just like, there's certain facts that are going to be more readily available through robots in the future, that it's almost useless to obsess over them right now. And that's so fascinating that you're that you're bringing this up, because it's making me think of other curriculums that I'm seeing that are coming out that are newer, and I'm wondering what you think of them. There's one that's coming to mind now, the Wild Math curriculum. It's like a nature-based curriculum. It only goes up to the fifth grade, so it's for the younger kids, but it's like a curriculum that you basically have to collect objects outside or measure things outside or weigh things outside, and it's all nature-based. I don't know if you've heard of it, because it's a very, very new curriculum. Have you heard of that one before?
No, I don't think I've heard of that one, but I'd be interested to learn more about it.
Yeah, I'm gonna send it to you. It's a really cheap one. It's like $20 for the whole year. It's a homeschool mom created it. And so for that $20, you get like a PDF of that whole grade level for the year. And it's just a bunch of ideas, really, of things you can do outside that are math worthy. Cool. But you know, I am wondering what you think then. Is there a curriculum that comes as close as it could to being perfect, or... or are you going to be designing one? I feel like that's coming.
I always have thoughts about, like, you know, well, first of all, if I think that something should exist, like I think, oh, this concept should be explained this way, then, and this is how I found a lot of curriculum. I think, okay, this would be a good way to approach this topic. And then I Google it immediately. I don't waste my time. If it's been done already, then I don't want to sit down and do something that's been done already. And so that's why I've done so much research and finding these different things. And some stuff has already been done well. And so it saves me time. I don't have to do it myself. There is some curriculum that I like that I tend to recommend. There's one that's free that's not meant for homeschool students, but it's freely available to anybody. It's from Utah. It's called Utah Middle School Math, I think. And I can provide some links in the notes.
Yeah, I will be grabbing lots of links from you. I'm keeping notes. So for any of the listeners who are like, what did he say? Just check the show notes on this and you'll see links. I'm going to gather them together. But so that one is called Utah Math, Utah Middle School Math.
Yeah, something like that. And it's pretty thorough. That's the thing I like about it. I would say if you're in sixth grade and you're used to a different style of curriculum in elementary school, it might be a hard transition. So that I usually oversee people using curriculum like this because it's a bit of a different style. It's more like, we're not gonna spoon feed you formulas. We're gonna make you earn them a bit more. And we're not going to just tell you, oh, here is here's the slope formula or something. We want you to see, we want to like help you build up the concept on your own so that it becomes like second nature instead of like just a formula you memorize. And that's, I think, the difference between some curriculum, like good curriculum versus bad curriculum. Like bad curriculum in my mind is like, what's the point of this? Because calculators can do it better. Why are we just teaching a kid to memorize a formula when a computer can do all that stuff already? The point of it is to learn the underlying concepts so that they have tools in their toolbox so that they can solve harder problems that computers can't solve. Or that they can apply those techniques in their daily life or with whatever job that they want to have in the future. And so, you know, there's so many things that we use math for in our daily lives, but it really doesn't come across like that in math curriculum, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wonder, does Utah middle school math, do they do a good job with that, or do they still kind of fall short in that area of showing kids how math shows up in the real world?
It's not my favorite. The thing that they do well is they make you think about the math in a really thorough way, and you earn everything yourself, and you don't,
I see.
You don't really, it's not process oriented, like, oh, here's the process, follow this example. So many math books, and this is public school, homeschool, doesn't matter, they're all like this, so many that I've seen. They have a little explanation of a thing, and then the questions are like, to do these sets of questions, look at this example and follow this, like, that's not useful. Following, it's like an IKEA, oh, just follow this example. Life's not like that. Life doesn't have an IKEA manual, you know?
Yeah.
You have to use thinking skills and critical analysis.
So, I mean, I feel like I'm not a math person, so I can't understand what you mean by, like, what would be the best way for a subject to be taught, like, say, I don't know, algebra or geometry, what would be a better way than, rather than doing it that way, where you show them an example, like, this is how you do it, and now do these 10 problems. Like, you're saying that's not ideal, that's not useful. So what would be a better way to teach that concept?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the difficult thing for me is how do I communicate that difference to people? Because I can say, oh, this is not the right way, but then they're like, well, what is the way? How would you teach math? How should you teach math? And the answer is, let's see, I think maybe one really quick example that is not going to lose too many people is take squaring a number. So like 5 squared is 5 times 5, right? 5 times 5 is 25. Okay, 6 squared is 6 times 6 is 36. A lot of us have learned that in middle school or high school or something. So, and then you can introduce kids to the concept of the square root. Well, the square root is of 30, the square root of 36 is 6, because 6 times 6 is 36. That's how it's typically taught. And my slight adjustment to that is forget about that idea and think about literally a square. And imagine that there is a square with 25 boxes, and it's just like tiles. So 25 boxes or 25 tiles in a square shape. And then how long is the side of that square? And the answer is 5. It's 5 on each side, because 5 rows of 5 makes 25 tiles. And that's what the square root means. The square root means how long is the side of a square that has 25 tiles in it. And so it's a slight reframing, but now it gives you something to latch onto when you think about square roots. Also, the name square is in the title.
Right.
5 squared. It's called 5 squared because it's a square.
That called, never even occurred to me. I'm like, whatever, I just have to know square root, and I don't want to.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, then what about things like math you see? Because now you're making me feel like maybe it's a visual thing, that maybe kids really thrive on visual examples. So do you know about math you see, and do you feel like they do that well with giving kids visual examples?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So another thing, and I'll just mention Singapore math in here also, because they use visualizations of problem solving as well. And I don't... I will say that visuals are important. The main thing is just that you have something to latch on to when you learn a subject. So when you learn a concept, it's not just a vocabulary word that doesn't have any meaning. It has, you can relate it to some meaning that makes sense to you. So like for decimals, I use money a lot. So when kids learn about decimals, they can go back to, well, I understand money and money is like decimals. And so the decimal, I mean, money is not really a picture, but it's something that they can connect to when they understand, when they're learning that. So you mentioned Matthew C. Matthew C. is great for visuals. I would be careful to recommend it by itself because it's about 2 years behind grade level, but, and they also only do one topic at a time. So it's like fractions, decimals, you know, all at once, as opposed to like a normal year of math, like fourth grade math is like, you learn a little bit about fractions, you learn a little bit about decimals, you learn a little bit about a lot of different things. And then the next year is, you know,
the next level.
The next level of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, because I, you know, it also, as I'm listening to you talking about that, it makes me think of like my son, he's really into football. I don't know if you work with athletes on your tutoring lineup, but my son is really into football, and he was recently teaching me how much math he's learning through playing, with learning about how many feet are in a yard and having to do his 7x table to calculate the points of like with the field goals and the touchdowns.
Yeah.
And learning about how many yards they threw for, how many miles per hour they can run, and just like crazy concepts that to me, I'm over here like annoyed that he loves football, and then he's starting to teach me all this stuff. And so I found that there's actually a football math workbook, but it's slightly above where he should be. But it takes all of the math, all of the fractions and math and numbers that show up in football, and it puts it into a math workbook. And I'm like, whoa, this could probably really speak to a kid that's obsessed with football and really only speaks football. So I don't know if you ever come across that when you're tutoring kids who maybe have an obsession with something and you try to relate it to them. Has that ever come up for you? And if it did, how did you make it relate to something that meant something to them?
Yeah, this is actually hard. It's not easy to do because it depends on what their interest is. But sometimes when I have the mental energy, I really try. And there was this one kid who was really into video games. And I know a lot of video games. I've been playing video games since I was a kid. So I can relate to kids on that level. And so he was telling me about this game that he was playing. And so I was like, okay, I want to teach him some algebra, but I also want to relate it to him in a way that will make sense to him or be relevant to his interests and his experience. And so I started explaining some algebra concepts in the context of like the rankings and how different players get matched up and things like this. And so I tried to relate that to him. I think the football example is great. One interesting example that comes to my mind immediately is because in football you have 7 points for a goal and then three points for a field goal or something.
My son would be so disappointed in me. I forgot. I think it's a touchdown and maybe 6 points, and then the field goal is an extra 2 points
three?
Or something. I don't know. Mad at me. He's only 9, but he's like a football whiz.
Okay.
Yeah, the field goal gives you extra points, whatever.
Yeah, so there's some number, it's like 6 or 7 or whatever, and then the field goal is some number of points. And so you could ask one, you know, mildly interesting question you could ask is like, what scores are possible? Like, can you get every possible, like if 30 points, is it possible to get 30 points, for instance? And I think it's possible to get every score, but I'm not exactly sure how football works, so I'll have to... I don't know anything about football, but
yeah, but see, I can see how you're able to, you don't have to know anything about football because you could probably, you think about math so differently that you immediately see the numbers in everything. So you probably wouldn't have an issue applying what you know. So I think that's interesting. So yeah, I mean, the different math facts that come up, you said that there was a topic of opinions on math facts. So what did you mean by that, the topic of math facts and your thoughts on those?
Oh, yeah. My thoughts on math facts have evolved over the years as well, as I've really dug into. So when I started teaching math, it was mostly high school, and then it kind of branched out to middle school. And then as I started teaching homeschoolers, it branched out even more to like upper elementary school. And then I started teaching kids that were in middle school and didn't know elementary school math, essentially. And that's not to say like all homeschoolers are bad at math or anything. The way I put it is homeschoolers are like at the ends of the bell curve sometimes. So they're either super gifted or maybe a little bit behind in some ways. There's more in the middle now because a lot of families have started homeschooling. But at the beginning, it was a lot of gifted students and kids that are struggling with the school system for some reason. But so as I started teaching younger and younger ages, it was more outside of my wheelhouse. And I was like, okay, well, how do I teach fractions? Because there's always the easy way where you just explain the process. You know, you tell someone like, oh, here's how you do this, and you magically get the answer. But I hate teaching math in a way that makes math seem like a black box. It's like, you do this one trick and it like some answer comes out and they're like, whoa, crazy.
How'd you do that
magic trick? Like, I hate teaching math that way because it makes math seem like some esoteric, you know, black magic. And I don't want math to be mysterious to students. I want it to be clear. I want it to be make a lot of sense. And so as I started going towards the earlier years where they have to start really understanding what arithmetic is and what it means, I asked myself, what is the right approach to arithmetic, and what's the right approach to like multiplication and knowing your multiplication tables? Like, should you just memorize them? Or is there some underlying intuitions that they should be gleaning before they memorize them? And so the kind of conclusion that I came to was that, first of all, a lot of kids, in fact, one of the biggest indicators that a kid is gonna struggle with math, especially middle school and high school, is if they don't know what multiplication means. This is one of the biggest, clearest signs.
Oh, that's interesting.
And what I mean by that is not do they know or not know their multiplication facts. Because I realized at some point that somebody can know what 3 times 4, that 3 times 4 is 12, but not know why 3 times 4 is 12. And if their needs aren't being met, then maybe you need to find something else. And then as far as dyscalculia, so just to give people an idea what that is, it's when you look at a group of a few objects, if it's 4 or less objects, you can immediately see how many objects are there. So if you have 4 dots on the screen, you don't need to go 1, 2, 3, 4. Your mind can just know instantly that there's 4 dots there, or 3 or 2, and you can distinguish how many dots almost instantly, within a few milliseconds. But kids with dyscalculia, they have trouble with this, and it takes them much longer than normal for them to see how many things are there. And counting is the basis of all math. And so if you have trouble with counting, you're gonna probably have trouble with other things, because literally everything in math is based on counting. And it's just more and more complicated versions of counting, essentially. Even calculus, even any advanced high school math, it's just different ways of counting. And so that leads to lots of issues and low confidence, and low confidence begets more low confidence, and then anxiety and test anxiety, and just, I'm not a math person, I can't do math. And so the solution to that is meeting them where they're at, starting with counting, working up from there, doing multiplication and addition in a visual or a physical way, like literally having things. And let's make groups of 3. Let's skip count by 4. Let's, you know, make equal groups, you know. That's what division and multiplication is, and that's how it should be taught, I think. And really make it tangible and physical to them. And eventually they'll build up enough experience to start mastering those things. And then they can start to hopefully memorize And there's also ways of maybe writing numbers so that they have a certain number of dots in them. I think I've seen this as new research into dyscalculia, but I'm not up on the research that well. I don't usually deal with students that have severe problems like that, or I don't know what to call them severe. It's just, you know, it's like, yeah, dyslexia, I guess.
I was just going to say that. It's almost like the dyslexia of math, where I think a lot of people know that dyslexia is a thing that you see. Well, you think of dyslexia as being that you see words backwards, or you see letters backwards, or you write them backwards, or you read things backwards, and that basically it just interferes with your ability to read from left to right on a page. And I feel like a lot of parents like respect that as being something that's truly going to make reading hard for you. Mm-hmm. Whereas I don't think there's as much talk about things that make math harder for you, that if they were corrected, math maybe wouldn't be so hard. And so that could be mm-hmm. anything from, like we said, dyscalculia, which I didn't even know that that's what it was. I just knew it was a thing, but I didn't read into it either. And then visual problems. So, you know, I don't know if you run into that with this type, the type of students you're getting. Are they mostly just parents who want their kids to catch up, or are they just kids who are having a hard time and they're not behind?
I definitely have some severe cases. I get the whole spectrum kind of, but like I definitely have a lot of kids that are in eighth grade and their math level is like second or third grade level math. And so I always try to diagnose exactly where they're at as soon as possible, because it's really hard to go ahead in math if you have some deep holes. And so the first thing I always do is try to address the holes, because that's the first priority. I don't like to just, you know, gloss over the gaps in knowledge typically. So if kids have big issues, then we go back and we try to address those issues first. And it's more common than you might think. There's lots of kids that are in middle school and high school that just did not get some of the stuff that happened in elementary school.
I still remember that the day that they taught like negative numbers and the rules of what happens when you multiply like a negative number towards a positive number, that your result will always be a negative. Like the day that we learned that, I wasn't there. So I was always not understanding the rule about negative and positive numbers. And so I'm like, why can't I know? And you could see how much it traumatized me, because now I know. But I'm like, I got so many answers wrong just because I didn't know that one simple rule.
Of course.
And nobody caught on to the fact that I didn't know that lesson. Mm-hmm. And everyone kept moving on. And I was just still here like, why is the number always negative? I don't get it. And
yeah.
So like things like that, it makes me think of how important it is not to have gaps in math. So, you know, for any of the listeners who are thinking of reaching out to you for tutoring, is that how you guys start out? Do you start out with like an assessment to see where the gaps begin, or how do you start out when you're first getting a new student, in case any of the listeners want to reach out to you and see if their kids are behind and in need of help?
Yeah, so I usually do a bit of a consultation at first. I just talk to the family and get to know like what their history is with math and the child's experience. Like, do they like math? Do they not like math? Do they hate math? Do they have math anxiety? How did their sixth grade year go, or whatever it is? By the way, this is for public school students mostly, but like the most common thing I hear is, oh, my sixth grade teacher was atrocious. And that is the thing that led to like the vast majority of all their math issues for high school and beyond. It's sixth grade is somehow such an important year, I think, because it's this weird transition from arithmetic, which feels familiar, to more abstract thinking, which feels less familiar. Like you said, the negative thing, right? It's like, oh, okay, all you had to do is just tell me that it changed signs. By the way I explain that is, you think about a number line and there's zero in the middle, and then you have a positive number multiplied by a negative number, flips it to the other side, flips it to the negative side, and then multiplying by another negative, flips it to the positive side. And it just keeps flipping it back and forth as you multiply by more and more negatives. And so that's just to give you a visualization of like what's happening and what's going on.
Yeah, because I've already forgotten all those rules. I only remember that one rule because of how traumatic it was for me.
Yeah, I know.
But that's crazy. So, okay, so then you start out with the assessment, and then you go from there in terms of picking. So do you end up picking a curriculum with the clients, or do the parents have to have their curriculum decided? How does the next step go after you do the consultation part?
Typically, they can do whatever they want to do, and I work my magic. I just do my own thing. And so I assign my own homework. I use my own curriculum. The parents don't have to interfere with it at all.
Okay.
So if they want to continue using whatever curriculum they're doing, that's fine in conjunction with what we do. But for some families, I just take over math and I just become the math teacher, and I give weekly homework assignments and we go through stuff together and, you know, one-on-one. And then I progress wherever they need to be, wherever they're at, that's where we start and we go from there. And so if I feel like they're going quickly and they're off to the races, then I pick a curriculum that suits their style and suits their thinking style. And then if they're more like, okay, I need to take my time, I need to, you know, go easy, then I give them something a little bit more step-by-step and a little bit, you know, bite-sized pieces, and something that will also fill in the gaps and help them build their critical thinking skills, but not overwhelm them.
Right. And so then one of my last questions for you too then is about parents who are needing credit for math. Like, they want to be able to have their kids take a math class where at the end of it, they're going to get credit that they can use for their kids to either go back to school later or for their kid to use to apply to college with. So then what would be your advice in that area? Are you providing that, or do you recommend programs that provide that are good?
Middle school, it's usually fine. And there's less, it's kind of easier to just get by with whatever I provide them, or like the regulations aren't as strict in middle school. I give them plenty of homework to do. I give them, you know, all kinds of stuff, or they have curriculum at home that they're already using with the ES or the whatever, with the charter. High school is where it gets more complicated. You know, you have AP classes, you have A through G classes, you have all these requirements that you need to meet, especially if they're trying to get into, you know, a good university, or if they want to transfer to a community college or what have you. So in those cases, there's not a lot of A through G in-person classes, because they're hard, they take a lot of time and energy to run. And so there's online programs that I would say are not very good. They're cheap, and, you know, it's just like, well, I passed the class and I got a credit, but most of them you're not gonna learn too much math from, or not it's not gonna stay with you really. So there's not a lot of good opportunities for A through G high school math, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the conundrum a lot of parents are in, is that there's just so many options and they don't know what is the best to choose for their kid. But I like what you're saying about it, how there really isn't a silver bullet. Like, there's no one magic button that you can press that's going to bring you to the perfect one. It's really going to be like a analysis of where your kids are and what their strengths are, what their interests are. So I love that you're available to sort of help be that bridge between where the parents are and where the kids are, and helping the kid get to where they want to be with their goals. So if any of the listeners do want to reach out to you for help, what would be the best ways that they can get information about what you're offering for math help?
My website is just my name, just jameswigglesworth.com, and it's spelled exactly as you expect, Wiggles and Worth, and it's hard to forget.
It does sound like one of those famous names, which I feel like your name is going to be famous one day, because you're probably going to design something super awesome for math with all the research that you're doing. People don't just do that for fun, so I think you're going to end up using all that research to ultimately make a name for yourself, but also make something that's a valuable tool for kids.
Yeah, that's my goal. I hope to do that one day.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. Well, thank you for being on the show, because you've given us a lot to think about. And I hope that the listeners who were hearing this episode are going to reconsider what they thought about math and ways that they can think about math differently. So I appreciate you so much taking the time to be here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And for adults, this is almost not even a sensical question. Like, it doesn't even cross their mind that someone wouldn't really know why 3 times 4 is 12, maybe. Especially math teachers, I think, because if you're teaching math, you for sure know why 3 times 4 is 12. But what I mean by that is that multiplication is repeated addition. And so the reason that 3 times 4 is 12 is because you have 4 sets of 3. So 3, 3, 3, 3, that makes 12. And you can visualize this, you can write it out. You can say like, okay, circles, and then there's a group of circles, and then another group of circles, and you can kind of organize them in an array. And some kids think that the visualization of 3 times 4 should be 3 and then 4, and that makes 12. But that's not how multiplication works. There has to be some repeated idea in there. And so I realized that there's a lot of kids out there that don't really, they never really grasp what multiplication meant.
Right. And then I guess if they haven't understood what it meant, then it feels like they have to keep learning it all over again every time it goes to another integer. So like every time they have to learn another, like their 5 times table or their 6 times table, it's like over and over, they feel like they have to keep re-memorizing things. And there's only so much room, I think, in your memory lane of your brain for you to memorize things before, as you start to learn new things, you forget the things you used to remember. And I love what you're saying about showing why things are as they are, because if you know why, then you can apply that why to any of the numbers that you're going to learn.
Exactly.
Times tables. So then that multiplication then leads to division understanding, and then I guess it continues on with algebra and, and geometry. So you know, I guess as we start to wrap up, I'm wondering if you have advice for any of the parents that are listening and they're wondering, where do I go from here? I'm just pulling my kid out from school. I don't want him to fall behind. I may homeschool him or her all the way through. I may send her, him or her back. Where do I go from here with picking a curriculum? Should I just use the curriculum that the math is that the school district provides, like the Common Core? Should I get Singapore? Should I get Math UC? Do you have any advice in that area? Not in terms of just picking curriculum, but just some thoughts to consider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. First of all, every child is different and every kid is at a different spot in their math journey and a math understanding. And I try to take that into consideration when I meet every kid, even if it's a class. I know that everyone's at a different place. And just because your friend is using a curriculum and that curriculum is going well for them doesn't mean it's going to go well for you. That's true. The first thing. And even if it's one that I recommend that I like I wouldn't even necessarily recommend somebody jump into Utah Math because it's weird. It's weirder than a lot of homeschool curriculum. And so if you're not ready for that level, it might be too traumatic for you. So I wish there was... The only thing that I've seen that's a good transition from the old style of math and the new style of math is called Transition to Algebra. It's another curriculum that's out there. Unfortunately, it's really hard to come by. You're not allowed to buy the curriculum. I have copies of it if somebody would like to look through it or something like that. But this is the best intermediary or transitionary type of curriculum that I've seen that's out there. As far as other popular homeschool curriculums, just be in tune with your child and see what's working for them. I would say if they have low math confidence, you want to give them something that leans towards the easier side, maybe even the old way of doing math, you know, and just help build their confidence. Confidence goes such a long way in math education.
I'm like, so glad you said that. I'm so glad you touched on the concept of low math confidence.
Mm-hmm. The first thing that I always address with a child with low confidence is their confidence in math. And I just help. I'm just a support in their life as far as that goes. I don't focus on learning at whatever speed is supposed to happen at that age or whatever. I just focus on like getting their confidence back and showing them like, hey, look, you did that, right? It's easy, it works. And then we go from there. And then once they have the confidence, then we can start to make progress in other areas. But you have to address that first. And if you feel, as a homeschool mom or dad, if you feel like your child's confidence is being affected by your interactions with them and teaching them math, then maybe take a step back and see if you can find some other alternative. Like, there's co-ops, there's tutors, there's charters that offer different services. See what you can do to, you know, help your kid gain that confidence. And if you don't feel like you're the best person to build their math confidence, because maybe you have math anxiety yourself, and that can transfer to kids. We've seen that. Math anxiety in teachers and in parents can transfer to kids. So if you feel like you might have math anxiety, please, you know, look for help in some way.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of help, I wanted to touch on that. Because I know there's places like Mathnasium, there's classes on outschool.com, and then there's the concept of dyscalculia. So I wanted to see if you could touch on any of those things, what you think of Mathnasium. It's like that tutoring, unlimited tutoring membership program that they have throughout the United States. And then OutSchool, where they do these classes about every subject, but they have math classes that kind of relate math to a video game, where they relate math to like cake decorating, or they just make math really, really relevant for that 1 hour. It's not like a curriculum, but it's just something fun you could do one time, or you could sign up for several of them. So I wanted to see what you thought about those two math help resources. And then I also wanted to see if you could talk about dyscalculia, if you've ever worked with kids that had that. So I know that's a lot of questions in one, but any of them you want to grab, go for it.
Yeah, so Mathnasium and classes like OutSchool, you know, feel free to experiment. And like I said, the most important thing is being in touch with your child and what's resonating with them. You know, that's kind of the beauty of homeschooling, is like the thing that I liked about homeschooling was that I could just find the things that interest me and, you know, be self-directed about what I like to learn, and I would just go and learn those things. But being in touch with your child is super important. Like, are they having a good experience at Mathnasium? You know, there's individuals that work there, and there's different individuals at different locations. So I don't want to blanket say that it's good or bad. It's just, if your child connects with the instructors that are there and they feel like they're having a positive experience, then go for it. If you feel like it's not worth your time or the energy, and just because somebody said, oh, Mathnasium worked for me, doesn't mean it's going to work for you. And so what I do is, like, I think of myself as a doctor. And when I find a student, I immediately diagnose what their issue is. And it might be no issue. It might be that they want to excel and go above and beyond what the schools are doing. And so I meet them where they are, and I try to help them exactly where they're at. And not everyone can do that. Not everyone at Mathnasium can do that. Not everyone at any, you know, math educator. That's not something everyone can do. So try to find somebody that will see your kid as a three-dimensional person and meet their needs where they're at.